Welcome to the Fourth Dialectica podcast. I'm Nick.
And I'm Matt.
And we are going into a huge mystery that happened this season, the first episode of season 7. Me and you were watching the show, and we saw this event. And we both immediately paused the video and said, "What was that?" But no one on the internet has been talking about it.
Yeah, it was one of those things. I immediately obsessed about it when we, like I said, you came over, we watched the episode, and it was just like something that the camera focused on and just really kind of made visible. But I couldn't put my mind around why it was there, and no one on the internet, that to my knowledge,
nobody cared. It's very bizarre. We'll start on a little PowerPoint here. For warning, this episode does have a lot of visual elements, I'm going to be pointing stuff out. So if you want to go to our YouTube channel, we'll make a post of including the visuals there. So it'll probably be better to watch this one instead of just listening to. But let's start this up. It's episode 1. Samuel Tarly is in Old Town, and we watched the best run sequence in the entire season, which is him getting food, cleaning shit that looks like food, and all kinds of terrible crap, and he's pushing books around, and all of a sudden he looks over at the restricted section of the library, and the camera slows down, the music comes up, and he looks longingly into this, gated door, which someone could climb over, but it's just a little door.
It's the principal.
The camera stops, and he's looking in, he focuses in, and then the camera stops, and it looks at this really old book with this strange diagram on it, and it focuses on it for a good, 5 or 6 seconds of, what is that? And it's clearly in the center of the frame.
And it really makes you wonder, why is it... So a show like Game of Thrones, and that has a fan base as Game of Thrones does, if you're a showrunner, you've got to think that everything you put on screen is going to be scrutinized by the fans and the people that obsess about this. So why is it that the showrunners decided to include this book and make it, of all the books that we've seen,
why doesn't it have a dragon on it? Why does it? It looks like... could you describe what you see?
So, in a sense, it's a circle it's a big circle, and it almost looks like an orbit around a central point with what looks to be other circles that have varying degrees of...
Shaded areas
around them. And it appears as if there's texts that describes what the reader would be seeing in the image. Basically the question we have to ask here is, what does this have to do with the whole show? Of the story?
And is there anything interesting that this image tells us? Because it does look like an astronomical work. Does this show us some interesting knowledge that the Maesters have? So I investigated this, and it was just... I think in the last week that I finally figured out what this image is. And it's this image, which will appear on screen now. This image comes from about 1,000 years ago, from one of the greatest minds in human history. His name is Abu al-Rayhan Muhammad ibn Ahmed al-Biruni. And al-Biruni was a classic genius Renaissance man. He lived in the Islamic Golden Age. And this image appears in his book, the Kitab al-Tafhim. This particular image appears in the original manuscript in Tehran. And it is describing the earth is at the center of where all those lines intersect. That is the moon around. And as far as I can tell, it is discussing the orbit of the moon, the sun, and the eclipses. Now, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I did read, I here's what I could not find, because I think I would have to go to Tehran to read this original manuscript. They did not put it online. And when I read the book, which I read the relevant sections, this image did not show up in the book. There were similar ones that did show up, but not that exact one. There's, you notice there's text that goes around it, and I've translated this to, I found this translation, of why the increase and decrease of the stars of the moon, of why the increase and decrease of the light of the moon is settled while other stars don't behave so. Observing these and not understanding the spirit of this is a misdeed, that the light of the stars is of their own. And that, I think, is the translation for these two bottom lines. I don't know what the translation is for this red section here. I don't think that's part of this quote. So I'll kind of just go into a little more of what I found. Al-Biruni was a classic genius who lived, he was born in Persia, and he traveled around. Eventually he became a, here's the interesting part, is because he essentially became something of a maester. He became a captive who, what was the guy's name? I'm not going to remember it.
A Persian lord or a Persian
prince. Yeah, he was a guy, he went around, he went into India and just smashed the whole place up. Did not really care about India or its culture, its people, traditions, religion, all that. And he was just looking for glory and, you know, plunder. But he took a captive Al-Biruni around with him, and he forced him onto his, you know, his small council, basically, and said, we need a man of your intellect, because this guy was an absolute genius. And he was kind of, Al-Biruni was an unwilling accomplice, perhaps, of this ruler. Truly a Renaissance man, truly, he's not in the tier of like a Newton Einstein, but he's up there. He's really excellent.
You say he would be a the Muslim, ancient Muslim lord Da Vinci almost?
Yes, very much, because he studied everything he could possibly get his hands on. His works on the discussion of medieval India is the source that you want. Because he's so objective. He's a devout Muslim. I'm not sure what kind. But he was a devout Muslim throughout his whole life. But he studied India and the Hindu religion extremely intricately. And he was not biased against them. He did not compare Islam's best to Hindu's worst. He wanted to understand it and present it in Indians' own words. He learned Sanskrit. He wrote most of his books in Arabic. He did. This one in particular was in Persian, which threw me off for a while. But eventually I was able to figure most of this out. Now, I could go. He made a bunch of interesting predictions. I'll finish off a little bit of discussion of who the man was. He accurately calculated the size of the earth. Eratosthenes did it 1,000 years before him, but Al-Biruni figured it out more precisely using trigonometry. And he was able to do that using the Indians did a very good job of understanding the sine function, the precise value of it. And he was able to utilize that to figure out the exact size of the earth, which was correct. Very, very accurate. Now, the question that we came up for is there anything interesting coming from this picture? And now, what questions would you, like, what would you ask?
So the big one is, okay, so if the showrunners or someone in the powers that be that are involved with the show made this decision to put this book into the show with this image, you know, from Al-Biruni, why? Why did they decide to put this in there?
Is it a hint that there might be a hidden moon? Or like there used to be, like there's, remember the one little scene in season one? Where they're talking about dragons, and so there used to be two moons in the sky,
right?
But one got too close to the sun, and it hatched 1,000 dragons. So could there have been two moons? Is that what this is talking about?
Because if you look at the two images side by side, they're pretty close, but they're not exactly the same.
It's clearly inspired.
It's clearly inspired. So the question becomes is, does this mean that somebody at the Citadel is studying orbits? Are they studying the orbit of the moon specifically?
Oh, that'd be fun. I've thought about this a little bit, and I have concluded that other than the relationship that Bruni was sort of something of a maester in his own time, there is not a whole lot of interesting things to come of this image.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, but we still need to investigate it regardless.
Now, so can we draw from this image, can we draw that... So let's just... So this image, how correct is this image?
Very incorrect.
Very incorrect.
And now, I was reading his book, and the book was The Book of Instruction in the Elements of the Art of Astrology, which is astronomy for him. Translation's weird. And there's a table of contents if you want to read through some of the stuff. And it just kind of goes through. Astronomy was the section I was really looking at. He was very good on a lot of points. However, there was a big debate around the time, the heliocentric versus geocentric debate. And what I found interesting was that Bruni did not know how to solve this problem. And well, he might have solved it later in life, but we don't have the books near the end of his life. This is one of his earlier works. And it seems like I was reading, it's actually kind of funny because he says there's two theories out there. There's one that the Earth goes around the Sun, and there's one that the Sun goes around the Earth. Now, the correct one is that the Sun goes around the Earth. And here's how we know this. The reason we know this is because there are phases of the Moon. However, we don't see phases of Venus or Jupiter. Like, they seem fully lit all the time. And because we don't see the phases of, you know, the shadow comes across, it's very clear that both the Sun must be further away than the Moon and is orbiting around. And also that the other planets, as you said earlier, the other planets create their own light. That the light is not from the Sun. Because they knew that the light on the Moon was from the Sun. They didn't know that it was... that they didn't think that the Moon just like created its own light.
Yes.
They assumed that the light of the Moon was... the light of the other planets, they emitted their own light. And that's why he's saying, why the increase and decrease of light of the Moon is settled while the stars don't behave so.
And so by the stars, he meant Venus, Jupiter.
No, he might. What I really need is someone who speaks Farsi that could really read the original and kind of give some of the intent.
And give more of the subtlety behind it.
Yeah, and like, what's that say? What do these, like, the words on the images exactly what they're saying? What's that red part? What does that say? Observing these and not understanding the spirit is a misdeed that the light of the stars is their own. He did say later that the planets... They light themselves. And the reason I can understand exactly why he would think that the geocentric theory, because if you say, okay, what's a testable we have a hypothesis, how could we test if you could create a test on do the planets fade and dim depending on how where they are relative
to
the
Sun. In the,
if,
in the sky.
You know, if they have the phases just like the Moon does, then they're orbiting around the Sun. And he didn't have a telescope to see them. You just look at Venus, it's this little dot. You can't tell if it's half lit up. And I mean, it's impossible. And I understand now why it wasn't really until Galileo that they started using telescopes that they said, oh, okay.
So you understand the intuitive thinking.
Yes. And this is also kind of getting us, if this is in the restricted section of the library, where are the maesters academically? Which is kind of the next thing to sort of get into. My understanding is George based the series off the War of the Roses, and it's kind of set in the 1400s.
However, we do see a smattering of... different things stolen from different points in history. Like, people bathe in Westeros.
Well, the Romans bathed 2,000 years
before.
But
they didn't bathe in the Middle Ages to the extent they do in Westeros.
Do they have large public baths?
They don't have public baths in Westeros. And I don't... The Valyrians might have.
For sure, I think.
The Valyrians, I would say the Valyrians probably had public baths, but I don't... I don't remember anything spoken of a bathhouse per se.
Yeah, they have aqueducts, which the people of Westeros look up and say, how in the world do you build something like that?
Right. So I don't see any type of public. There's no mention of public bathhouse. So they don't. But they do bathe to an extent that they do.
They know that bathing is good. You know.
And the Unsullied's cleanliness kind of stops them from getting the pale mare or dysentery in Meereen. Yep. We see evidence the banking that they have in their society is when we touched on in our recent video about Littlefinger. It mirrors more of
it's similar to what the Knights Templar had, which was before this, and banking systems have been around for a long time.
But I would say that the Iron Bank kind of mirrors the Medici Bank, which you're going to see around the 1500s, you know, 16th century.
It's not unreasonable.
So, I mean, we're looking at, and then bringing it back to the Maesters have a level of healing that's far beyond what they had in the onset of the Iron Age.
They don't know what diseases are, but do they, you think?
Well, we understand. They understand grayscale, and they understand the spread, how grayscale spreads. So they don't look at grayscale like they would the bubonic plague. So, like a lot of people around our time period saw the bubonic plague as you know, God's punishment or you know, something like that.
They were sort of mixed on that.
I
know a little bit about this, and the problem with that was the first thing is that God's come to cleanse us because we've been immoral. However, what they noticed, which that argument fell out of favor very quickly when it turns out that the clergy, that the pious and the non-pious, they all died indiscriminately, which really hurt that argument, and it didn't really sit well towards the end of the bubonic plague.
Right. Now, but going they back, treat people... So grayscale is really the biggest example we have of disease in the series. Now, I mean, chickenpox does come about... they talk about chicken pox, or they call them red spots. That in the Arianne Martell chapter.
For sure, it's chicken pox. It could be, and there's a lot of other ones.
The way they describe it makes me think of chicken pox because the maester that's treating the fake Marcella. Aerys Okhart claims that Marcella has red spots or chicken pox, and as a ruse to get. So the maester won't. So no one will go in to see him, and so the maester won't go in to see Marcella because he did not have red spots when he was a child. Okay. And so the disease is. So I mean, that's why it makes me think chicken pox.
Yeah.
So I mean, and then we have a pox, which a pox, you know, the pox you get from a sex worker, which is a venereal disease, which I'm sure is kind of a general term for the smattering of venereal diseases that we have. You know. So, I mean, and they have an understanding that, like, how diseases work to some extent. Like, they know that grayscale is by touch, and they understand that damp environments breed grayscale. So I would say they have a rudimentary understanding of it. Like, so they treat the people with grayscale like the Romans did with the lepers. They would
isolate them.
Yeah, they isolate them, and they knew that by keeping them away from the general population, that it wouldn't spread. However, they don't have an understanding to the extent where cholera outbreak in London, where they discovered that you know it was a certain well that had cholera in it. They don't have that level of.
In what year was that?
Oh God, I would say that was until the 1800s or something, but they don't quote me on that.
Here's what I'm thinking. Because we'll finish up with this, and then we'll get into the maesters. I don't think that this image here would be particularly new information or very relevant information in the Game of Thrones world. My general conclusion is there was a set designer who said, we need the restricted section of the library. We need some good sciencey looking pictures. And they just Google searched sciencey looking pictures. Like, I just Google searched cool, like, astronomy, old astronomy. And this was one of the first images that came up. and it's not copyrighted because it's 1,000-some years old. And my thought is, they said, ah, what's this? It looks cool. And they just sort of put it in. Now, it's possible that some set designer knows who Alberuni is. He knows about his genius and wonderful things he found out. But part of me just says, I don't attribute to, not malice, which you can attribute to ignorance. I think it was just kind of...
So you don't think that this particular image being in the restricted section of the Library of the Citadel...
There's no need for it to be in the restricted section. As far as I can tell, there's nothing interesting other than people used to think in the geocentric theory. And I'm guessing that the people in Westeros... Well, do they have telescopes?
Well, they certainly have rudimentary telescopes, yes.
Then they are. They're definitely.
They're interested in this. They're interested in astronomy because Maester Luwin uses his Muris lens to gaze at the stars at night. I believe Victarion takes a Muris lens from, and it's more or less a telescope in the sense that they had in the Golden Age of Pirates is what I bring up is that type of telescope. So seafaring. Maester Luwin looks at the stars. So they do study astronomy. So I guess it would make sense to have some maester have an astronomical diagram.
If that's the case, then they definitely would have noticed. They definitely would be heliocentric. Some Copernicus type figure would have already came around. If that's the case, then that image is severely updated. Because Bruni lived in 1000 AD. That's around the time when he, like literally 1000, when he made that image. It was basically this, it was similar to what Ptolemy and Aristotle came up with. That's just very outdated stuff. It's nothing that really be in
the... So by the time the telescope image. Really came around, that was not...
That was a game changer, and once you have telescopes, you can count the number of the moons in Jupiter, and say, oh, there's other planets with other moons around them, you can see the rings of Saturn, you can tell the Earth goes around the Sun, the Earth rotates. Do you want to bring up our little scientific article now, or do you want to finish up with the Maesters?
Well, I guess with the Maesters, and our point with this image that we saw is, unfortunately, as much as we would like it to, I don't think we can draw any type of, revelation about the seasons or the length of the seasons or from this, which is what we were kind of hoping.
I was so hopeful.
Yeah, we were kind of hoping that this was just some,
I was hoping George told them to put this in.
Right, and that he said that, for some reason, George R. R. Martin, when he was discussing or when he was thinking about the series, he this came to mind, and this is why we have 10-year long winters. And
it's such a strange scene when they spend it's so deliberate. And I've actually thought about this. I think the reason why that scene is so deliberate and a cautious viewer, it picks up instantly. A cautious viewer will pick up instantly that the director's focusing your attention on this. This is important. I think the guy who directed that scene with Sam was a completely different director than the rest of the episode. The style, the editing, everything was so different. And I think the reason it stood out so much was because whoever that other director was just like a better director. And he didn't really know everything, but he was like, oh, this looks important. And he's made an effective scene. And surrounded by other scenes that aren't that effective, this stood out.
Well, and it's not as much. It's not as good as an answer as we hoped it would, but it does kind of represent the fact that thematically there is a wall between Sam and the knowledge that he wants or needs.
I find that absolutely baffling. Like, this is one of the most interesting things in the whole series. There is a restricted section of the library. There's a book which normal people aren't allowed to read.
And that does happen in the book as well. So in Feast, Pate is, I would, I believe he was tricked into stealing a key to give to the faceless men that, for lack of a better term, we'll call him Jack and Hagar. He's tricked to steal a key that gives him access to restricted sections of the Citadel. Now, most universities that we have, they don't restrict knowledge. I mean,
no, and that's what makes it so interesting to me, because I do like physics and weird science, and I just looking around, like I was able to find this weird book from some guy who lived 1,000 years ago in the Islamic Golden Age. There's no restrictions on any of that. It's all just public, put out there. And if you take the time going to a library, you can find this stuff out.
I'm sure you could. I'm sure most libraries would have a way to, you know, most university libraries would have.
This is pretty obscure stuff. But the question, and now we're getting towards the fun. Let's go Alex Jones. Let's get our conspiracies going. If there is secret knowledge that normal people aren't allowed to know, you got to be a high-ranking official who can keep a secret. What sort of knowledge would they be hiding? Like, in the real world, it would be like non-religious knowledge that the church would keep
locked away. Right, so this really kind of drives the point home. Are the maesters keeping the people of Westeros in what is essentially the Dark Ages? Do they have, you know, so are they so obviously a way to control the populace is, in the masses, is to keep them uneducated and only have the educated, knowledgeable, literate, and things like that. However, are the maesters limiting what they teach to the upper class?
I would say yes. The first one is they're very skeptical of magic. It's one of the first things that we hear about in the story is Bran says to Luwin something along the lines of, like, does magic exist? No, son, there's no such thing as magic. And then he just drives that point home, and Bran's like, nah, I think you're lying to me. But he's too young to figure that out. And Luwin studied magic, along with many people in the Citadel. However, and they have frowned upon, however, we also learn that there's people in the Citadel who do study magic, necromancy, dark arts. And some people get kicked out for studying it, but Marwyn studies this, and he's still a...
Marwyn is literally the archmaester of magic, more or less. So it's really odd that an organization would both hold a position of, you know, of a teaching that they don't believe exists.
They definitely believe it exists. Now, I've been thinking about this.
Do they just want a monopoly?
Science is not a... Some people mistake this. Science is not a set of knowledge. These are the things we know. And that's science. That's not how it works. Science is a methodology that you use to understand the world. Now, if magic is part of the world, you could study it scientifically. Now, I don't know if they understand the scientific method yet. Maybe they haven't figured it out. That'd be a fun one.
Well, the maesters question other maesters' findings, which I think is a step towards the scientific
method. No, well, Plato did that too. So did Socrates.
So, I mean, we don't have any record of...
An experiment is what you're looking for.
Well, we have... Qyburn experimented with the living bodies.
No, he was investigating. He's investigating. Like, experiment, like, using the scientific method is very different than just kind of cutting people open, seeing what happens. Like, for instance, a good early... It had bad results, but it was a good experiment, was lobotomies. So, okay... We have people who have these disorders. We're going to cut the front of their brains out, and maybe this will help them out. And then you cut a bunch of people's brains up, and then you can test and you write down what the results are. And that's actual science. Do we have any evidence in the books that they do like some sort of scientific testing?
And see, this is actually one of the reasons why I'm super excited about Winds of Winter, because Sam is actually at the Citadel. Maesters are forced to sit in a room with a dark room with a glass candle, okay? And they're tasked with trying to light the glass candle, and some of them try to do it and all of them fail. But as far as the scientific method as we know it today, I don't know. And
no,
and
no evidence.
No, there's no evidence of it, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. We just don't have...
I would say there is evidence in the fact that they have so many poisons. They have poisons in Game of Thrones that we would, like... I'd be afraid if they were real things.
Like the Strangler, like
the Strangler,
know,
or
the Tears of Lys.
Basilisk's blood.
Yes. Now, which is fascinating, but could Basilisk's blood just be like an opiate or a meth, you know, or something like that that would cause a...
Well, Milk of the Poppy is definitely
opiate.
An opiate.
It's an opiate, yes. So, it's I don't know. So, I would say that we don't have any evidence of them having a scientific method.
Well, my reason why I say that is evidence is because... To create such a thing, we have giant pharmaceutical companies that spend billions of dollars a month trying to find out drugs that do very specific things. And they have these drugs. Maybe that's just, like, fun writing, which is why I lean towards it. It's like, oh, yeah, you got some fun things that we can put in. You know, if there's secret poisons, you know, that's... creates fun conspiracies, which George loves.
Do you think there is a Grandmaster conspiracy to keep...
Yes, because it's fun. There's probably several. There's probably several factions, because this is how George writes, is there's going to be several factions within the Maesters who are fighting for different things. There's probably going to be the Hightowers. There's probably going to be the... I'm going into your realm of knowledge, but I'm making my guesses. There's probably going to be the Hightowers. There's probably going to be the Marwyn supporters, and there's probably just going to be the normies, and the normies are just kind of like the Lewin types who say, there's no such thing as magic, and there's some people like the Kyburns and the Marwyns who say, yes it is, and you're all fools for not understanding it, and the Hightowers who say, we understand it, but don't tell the normies about it because it's dangerous.
So do you think they have knowledge that they don't release to the general public?
That's why there's a restricted section.
Uh-huh.
Now, what do you think's in that restricted section? What could possibly be there? What knowledge is so dangerous?
Well, in the book, it's rumored that there's knowledge. There's a book, an ancient tome on dragons, that apparently has knowledge about dragons that the general public shouldn't have. Which kind of leads credence to the fact that the Maesters are anti-dragon, which is another discussion. Is if the Maesters have knowledge about dragons and they don't think that dragons are a good thing for society, so did the Maesters try to get rid of the dragons? So now they're trying to...
They're nuclear weapons with brains.
Right, so are they trying to get rid of dragons? And does that knowledge within the Citadel speak on
yes.
how...
they're trying to get rid of the dragons.
So that knowledge is maybe a way to bring dragons back?
Actually, no, I changed my mind. If there's different factions inside of them, inside the Citadel, some of them are against dragons... Some of them are for, some of them are neutral.
I would argue that probably a lot of the people within the Citadel themselves are probably ignorant to the, so I would say that, because you look at a modern university we have today, the majority of the students in the university, what are they there for?
To get a degree, to get a job.
There you go. And so you got to think, a majority of the Maesters don't remain at the Citadel. As a peasant in Westeros, you got to think, I don't have very many options, but if I know I'm a little bit smarter than most, I can maybe try to get myself into the Citadel.
You can become an Al-Biruni and sit next to a High Lord.
Right, so if I would argue that probably the main motivation of most of the Maesters is to graduate from the Citadel so that they can go live in a castle.
And that'd be the normal thing.
So that would be the people that are just going to university to get their undergraduate degree. You know, whereas, and then you have people that elect to stay on, you know, and maybe get a master's or a doctorate. And they're the people that...
And they're the ones who get the glass candle. They're the ones who might join one of those factions inside, you know, with Marwyn and whatnot.
Right.
Let's finish this off with big conspiracies, bold predictions. Okay, so big first one, dragons. There might be dragon knowledge. What do you think? What would be the sequel? What would be the bomb to dragon knowledge? That they've been evolved from worms? that there's fireworms in a volcano that they've been selectively breeding for thousands of years and they turned into dragons?
I think that would be more or less the recipe on how to create new dragons. Whether it be through magic,
They've had their Charles Darwin.
Yeah, or whether it be through magic or genetics or science fiction, you know, cloning or something along those lines that the Maesters have.
Oh, okay. How advanced could you see the Maesters being? Because we've discussed this before. The world of Westeros is clearly in a regression. They used to be advanced, and now they're not, and some people are regaining access to lost knowledge.
So what's fascinating here is the the High Tower, okay, is situated on top of one of the oily black stones. Now, for those who have not read The World of Ice and Fire, oily black stones have made their appearance all over the known world.
In several of George's books.
The surrounding wildlife around the oily black stones, wildlife does not approach the oily black stones. They're in areas of the world where, based upon the history that's presented to us, it's unlikely that the peoples would have had contact with each other. So it's reasonable to believe that the oily black stones predate a lot of the civilizations that exist.
They built the High Tower on top of this because it was so interesting.
Yes. Now, we have a very, very limited description of them. However, now this is my tinfoily, and I pulled this from other writers. This isn't completely unique. However, I will add my voice to the choir, so to speak. I believe that the oily black stones are a form of plastic. I think that they are reminiscent of the pyramids in the woods in George R. R. Martin's work in Seven Times Never Kill Man. I think that they have telepathic powers, and that's why wildlife and things like that don't approach them.
Why would they have telepathic abilities? Because they're made of, like, oils, or...
Well, so George R. R. Martin has these crystals in his writing that you can impart memories into them, and they can actually absorb consciousness. And in that consciousness, you can impart some of your latent telepathic powers. So in Nightflyers, one of the protagonists, Royd Aerys, his mother, before she died, implanted her consciousness into a crystal within the ship, and that consciousness retained her telekinetic abilities. In this particular case, it was Teek. So the ability to move things with your mind. So these plastic or maybe crystals that around Westeros might be implanted with people's psionic or telepathic consciousness. But that being said, the High Tower being built on the base of one of these ancient...
Maybe it's screwing with their minds.
It could potentially be screwing with the High Tower's minds. But however, I think that tells me that with this one being such a big stone, so to speak, that there might be... maybe underground, in the underground bunker or something along the lines in Old Town that has maybe remnants of a...
They have a computer that they can turn on, but they can't do anything with it?
Right. So there might be old world future, or, you know, old world or like future technology that exists under the ground. And the Maesters are actually just reading, computer files, and that's why they have knowledge of far and beyond... medically and scientifically, mm-hmm. what the normal person does. So they're in the Iron Age, but they have knowledge that's well beyond the Iron Age, in medicine and things like that. So, maybe tinfoily they have access to a computer or something like that.
They don't have a computer, for sure, but they do have probably like psychic They could probably like see the past or something.
Maybe? Perhaps, you know, so like maybe they, there's latent telepathic visions or something like that that are giving them.
Talk to the dead spirits or something. Correct. Of like Albert Einstein.
Correct. So, I mean, saying again, you know, and like I said, you know, Preston Jacobs talks a lot about, you know, it being science fiction and being telepathic versus like magic. But so, you know, perhaps the Maesters have just tapped into knowledge through telepathic means or something like that. Like we see that actually, there's actually, I believe, more evidence of that in the Undying of Karth. So when Daenerys goes through her
psychic trip,
she goes through what is, in a sense, like a never-ending building. And, you know, she sees doorways and she's able to look into what could be memories. We don't really see any guess of the future that's like come to pass, so to speak. We've just seen memories of the past.
She could just be tripping balls, man.
Right, she could be. However, George R. R. Martin has another story called... what's the name? Oh, man, what's the name of this? It starts a character named Holt. It's The Stone City. And so he has a novel called The Stone City in which the main character, Holt, ends up stranded on an alien world far away from where humanity is normally gone. And on this planet, there is this Stone City, which is basically this underground subterranean refuge that people go down into and they get lost in and never come back. And
it sounds like the catacombs of France.
So yeah, very much like the catacombs of France. If the catacombs of France had...
Were nuclear bunkers.
Were more or less what Danny goes through in the Undying. So Holt, through the story, you know, ends up having to hide down in the Stone City. And so he makes his way down into the Stone City and he plans on just hiding out there for a little bit, close to the stairs, so that way he knows he can get back up. However, through the course...
needs to read Hansel and Gretel. They've already solved this problem.
Yeah, so however, Holt himself gets lured into the Stone City, away from the stairs. And he gets lured in by more or less the same experience Danny has in the House of the Undying. So there are doorways... In the Stone City, it's described as like windows. So he basically sees windows of memories of the people that live there now and the people that used to live there. And then he continues to make his way. So it's almost like Holt, where Danny just kept walking and didn't enter a room. Holt entered a room. And Holt's desire was to travel throughout the entire universe. And so Holt basically walks from room to room and travels the universe that way. So, I mean, what I kind of theorize is that the Maesters have access to some sort of telepathic technology like that at the base of the High Tower or the Citadel. And,
okay, here's fun idea.
Like the Undying of Karth.
Fun idea. If they could use these massive powers, wouldn't they just be controlling everything?
I think they are.
Oh.
So I think the Maesters manipulate history. Because we do see it's definitely the Maesters. And the characters within Universe say that the Maesters are the ones that manipulated Robert's Rebellion to happen. If you read The Princess and the Queen and the Rogue Prince, you definitely get a feeling that the Maesters are manipulating history to, one, seem favorable to the Maesters.
Not when you say manipulating history, you're not saying they're rewriting old books. You're saying that they are changing the course of events. Like, they are actively telling kings what to do.
I believe so, yes. They're manipulating. So in the Dance of the Dragons, the Maesters are definitely construing information incorrectly. They are giving bad advice. They are not advocating for peace. As well as when they write history, they make themselves seem more favorable. They don't speak about the Maesters that made mistakes in negotiations, or the Maesters that did not soften.
They didn't send that raven.
Yes, correct. So I do believe the Maesters are manipulating history. And so I believe it's because if you start to have the point where everybody's educated, then you're not as special as, you know, if you're the only one educated. So I think that has a big thing to do with it. But the devil's advocate of that and the play the thought experiment would be, well, what about the rest of the world? So Westeros is obviously a finite area, and the Maesters don't have a presence in Essos or Pentos.
Is there any other big black stones?
There are big black stones everywhere. Mm. There's some in Sothros. The entire city of Shai, perhaps, is made of big black stones, which actually kind of...
Is there any normal areas that have these big black stones?
Maybe some places where the Sarnori were, or the Maze Builders, but the people don't really live there anymore.
So which ones were the Sarnori?
They were the Tall Men. They had an empire that the in the northern Essos that the Dothraki vanquished.
But they're all dead.
They're all dead now.
So can you think of one example of normal people say, oh yeah, there's Black Stone?
No. All the places that the Black Stone are have weird things that go on. The Iron Shai. Shai. What about the Rhoynar? The Rhoynar, I don't recall any Black Stone with the Rhoynar.
That big old castle that they visit. But you gotta remember,
the Rhoynar is George's utopia.
It's a fucking desolate ruin.
the Seastone Chair, perhaps, but the Ironborn have an interesting religious zealotry to them. So I don't know.
I don't know why either.
To the extent the Ironborn religious zealotry to for some of them is to the extent of the zealotry that existed in Seven Times Never Kill Man. So that kind of leads credence to that. But the Ashai actually is fascinating because the entire city is made of that black stone. And it Ashai, to me, almost seems like there was a nuclear wasteland.
Yeah, you've never been there. That's
But based upon descriptions, it seems like a nuclear wasteland. So if it was a super advanced society that is now wiped off the map due to nuclear war.
With the Valyrians, maybe. Two big old craters that create the long night.
But no, so that's kind of my take on the Maesters. I think that, you know, tinfoil aside, that they definitely have knowledge that they keep from the general public, and they do manipulate events. Regardless of how they got it through tinfoil technological means or just by study.
Well, I think that's the end of a good episode. What do you think?
I would agree. I think we got a little bit pretty far down the rabbit hole on that one.
Yep. Join us next time. It was a good chat. Let us know what you think if anybody's listening.
No one's listening.